Welcome to this week's Hammer Time podcast on the Dolphins Radio Network, 940 WINZ and Dolphins.com. I'm Hank Goldberg, and this week got one of the members of my tree, so to speak, Bob Wischusen. I remember when he and John Shombe came to work down here straight out of Boston College. What a class that was. Joe Tessitore. That's one of the great broadcast classes in history. Although Boston College, there was a lot of legacy there, Schnooze.
Yeah, we were all roommates. I don't even think I had a fake ID yet by the time I came down to work for you.
Well, you were better dressed than Shombe, I can tell you that.
I like to think I still am.
Well, yeah, it wasn't close. But anyway, he is now the voice, the radio voice of the Jets, and also with ESPN as an all-sports guy, and it just does great work. I love it when you and Brian Griese are working together. I get a big charge out of that.
Yeah, I had a fun year with him a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk Jets, because the Jets are an interesting story too. And I'm a fan of Rex Ryan. I think he did a heck of a job with the team this year.
I agree. I mean, they've exceeded every Vegas over-under that I saw before the year already, and they still have a chance to get another win on Sunday.
Don't think you have to talk gambling with me, okay?
Well, I would think that, you know, if there was one way, it used to be, you know, two ways to your heart. Obviously, a good menu and a good over-under. I think I remember both of those things.
Yeah, you have a good memory. That's true.
But, I mean, not only were they not supposed to win, as you know, more than six games, they've already won seven. But that was really by design. I mean, that's the thing that, you know, I know in New York when you've got 50 tabloid newspapers and they're all fighting for headlines, it's not a flashy or popular thing to say, but really the theme for them this year was supposed to be wait until next year, because they didn't spend a dime on their offense. And they, you know, they're going to be somewhere between $40 and $45 million under the cap, and when you factor in the draft choice that they're going to get for Darrell Revis from Tampa that still remains on that trade, and, you know, you factor also in some compensatory picks that they should get from free agents they lost last year, they could have somewhere between 10 and 12 draft choices and $45 million this coming offseason. And they weren't going to do anything to mortgage that flexibility. So they really were kind of dealing a hand to Rex Ryan and the offensive coaches that was a losing hand from the start, and they knew it, but it was a rebuilding year. So I don't know. I mean, the fact that he has this team, even in a playoff race early December, is a good coaching job, I think.
It was such an odd season for the Jets in one way, and that was there was one thing predictable about them, and that was every other week they were good. Talking about,
yeah,
and that was largely
it was at home,
and that was largely the inconsistency of the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, they had no skill position players, none. Santonio Holmes has been one of the major contract busts, if not the contract bust, over the last couple of years. He was supposed to be their best player. They didn't add to this group at all, and they had a rookie quarterback who at times was out there, you know, fighting the good fight alone. So, and he did what rookies do. You know, I mean, I think last year, the success of Russell Wilson, Luck, RG3, you know, in a very small sample size, probably skewed the vision that a lot of people ought to have of rookies. You know, I mean, you know, our lives growing up watching football, you expected a rookie, if he was a starter in his first year, to throw a bunch of interceptions and learn on the job. So, you know, I don't know. I think he has had enough moments where they probably, I think, still believe in him. I think they're going to probably, you know, I don't think they're going to go out and draft a quarterback in the first round, and I certainly don't think they're going to sign Jake Cutler or, you know, a big free agent. I think they'll bring another quarterback in to compete with them, but I really think that they'll go into next season with the idea that he's a rookie coming off of a rookie year, you know, was always known to be, and that's a struggle.
Well, Geno Smith has now put together two pretty good games in a row. So what can we expect of him this week?
Well, that's a good question. You know, he did get some weapons back. I mean, even though Santonio Holmes has been tremendously disappointing in the overall, the fact that he's back helps them. Jeremy Curley is by far their best offensive player. He missed three games with an elbow and came back a couple of games ago, and he comes back against the Raiders, and all of a sudden Geno Smith, you know, making some first downs. So, and they have found a running game with Chris Ivory. So when you put those weapons around him, at least it gives him a puncher's chance to move the ball and score some points. They went through that three-game stretch where, you know, they had I think about 20 points generated total in three games, and most of it was just meaningless at the end of blowouts anyway when teams were playing prevent. So now he's got some guys back, and you know, I would expect the Dolphins though to come out, you know, as a desperate team fighting for their lives. I'm sure folks down there were probably pretty disappointed at what happened this past weekend. So I have to think that they're going to be coming out breathing fire in this game, because it's going to be a game where at 1 o'clock, you know, they win it, all possibilities are still open for them to be a playoff team.
Well, knowing the mentality of the Jets, I'm sure they'd like nothing better, and their coach would like nothing better than to play spoiler in this situation.
No doubt. And also, they got killed a month ago by this team. So when you know this is your last game and a blowout in your building is pretty fresh in your mind, yeah, I mean, there's definite motivation. And you know what the other thing, too, is? You can sense inside the locker room, guys I've talked to, if you read the articles, too, or listen to the talk shows, you hear any Jet interviewed right now, they have Rex Ryan's back. As a group, they really do. They're playing hard for him, and they want him to be the coach. So this is one last chance for them to, you know, one last bullet point on the resume for him to be the guy. You know, it makes it harder to fire him the more games he wins at the end of the season. And if they end up winning three out of their last four, when, you know, theoretically, at least in three of those four games, the playoffs were a non-factor, that's got to say something when you're winning meaningless games because you think your coach's head might be on the chopping block.
Is there a split between the ownership and the general manager in terms of what their opinion is of Rex Ryan, whether they want to keep him or not, to your knowledge?
You know, no one knows. You know, John Itzik, since getting the job, has played his cards as close to the vest as any sports executive ever has in New York. I mean, he doesn't say anything. So no one really – I've talked to people at the highest level of the organization that ought to be in the loop on whether or not the coach is coming back, and they don't know what – because it really is a two-man committee. It's Woody Johnson and it's John Itzik. They're going to make the decision. So neither has said anything publicly to even hint – at what they might be thinking. And I'd love to answer that question, but I, you know, and again, if you read the newspaper coverage or you listen to the talk shows, you know, I mean, everybody's got a different opinion. Nobody knows for sure. And honestly, anybody that says they know what those two are thinking or what they're going to do is lying, because they have not told people at the top level of their own organization what they're thinking right now. So maybe there is a rift between the two in terms of what they want to do with Rex, you know, but neither's tipped their hand.
How's your relationship with the coach?
Really good. I mean, he is as regular and approachable and you know, easy to deal with as an NFL head coach ever could be. And he's just, you know, what you see is what you get. There are the number of times that I have talked to him, you know, kind of quote-unquote behind closed doors about something and then listened to his answer in the press conference later that day. And it's the same answer in the press conference oftentimes that he gives in like a one-on-one situation. He's just almost to a fault, a very honest guy with all of us, with the media. He really wears his heart on his sleeve and tells you what he's thinking. And I think that has endeared him to many members of the media, but also a lot of Jet fans.
Bob, what's going to happen with Mark Sanchez?
Well, he'll be released. I mean, it's really... you know, the two contracts that they save the most money on with all that salary cap that I mentioned earlier that they'll have next year are on Mark's contract and on Santonio Holmes' contract. Probably half, maybe 60% of the salary cap space that they'll free up is getting those two contracts off the books. So I think as an organization, they've moved on. And really, in the end, that's probably the best thing for Mark. Anyway, he needs a fresh start. He needs to go to another team with a different coaching staff and a different city, you know, and I don't know, maybe this year not playing may in the long term be a blessing in disguise, just to get away from it and you know, and realize that he won four road playoff games in his first 2 years with the Jets. And there definitely will be at least a handful of coaches, you know, in the NFL, they're going to stay. All right, his last 2 years with the Jets were terrible, but you give me a guy that in his first two seasons in the NFL won four road playoff games, I'd like a crack at coaching him. I'd like to bring him in. He'll go someplace as a backup. There's no chance he goes anywhere as a starter. But he's going to have a job next year in the league. I don't think there's any doubt.
I know that Matt Sims had an excellent preseason, and I'm pretty sure that he'd like to stick around with the Jets.
Yeah, they like him. They like his moxie. I think they like him as kind of a developmental guy, but I don't know that they ever realistically view him as anything more than a number two. Maybe a developing number three that could be a good number two. Geno on the team is the number one, and it's pretty clear cut. You know, I think their most logical move next year, when you look at the free agent market, you know, if you just pick a name out of thin air. You ask Chad Henne another Mark Sanchez type, not Mark, but a player that, who knows, next season might be interested in coming in and trying to at least compete, push a young quarterback. And, you know, they already showed a willingness this year to bench Geno Smith when they felt like they had to. I could see them, if they were in a position next year where, who knows, you're a couple games over 500. Geno struggles a little bit. I mean, you know, they drafted Geno in the second round, not in the top five. So, you know, there's always different ramifications that go along with that, too. So I think they try to bring in a veteran quarterback with some presence about him, someone who's probably started some games in the league, but not a quarterback that you think is going to be your guy of the future. You know, if somebody to come in and push Geno Smith and challenge him and create competition, but I don't see, there's a lot of speculation in New York that the Jets, with this quarterback-heavy draft, will be looking at the quarterbacks in the first round. And I just don't see that. I think they're going to stick with Geno and bring in a veteran to put opposite him on the roster.
We haven't talked defense. What about what we can look for defensively? Looking at the Dolphins and their own offensive situation, 57 sacks stands out.
Yeah, no, and the Jet defensive front is their strength. I mean, their front seven, their pass rush. It's the first time since 1981 that the Jets have had two players with double-digit sacks. So it's the sack exchange is the last time that, you know, they did that, and it's Muhammad Wilkerson and Calvin Pace that are both over 10 sacks. So in a way, it's an interesting chess match. The game up in New York that the Dolphins really just knocked the Jets sideways was the quick passing game. I mean, it was the 3 and 5 step drop, get it out quick, slant game, because the Jets have struggled a bit in the secondary. And so the Dolphins looked at it as, all right, well, we're not going to give that pass rush any time to get to Ryan Tannehill. We're just going to take, you know, Mike Wallace and Brian Hartline, guys like that, and the tight end. And it was the seam game and the quick passing game, you know, some wide receiver screens. And, you know, the Jets with Antonio Cromartie, who was banged up at the time, and Dee Milliner, who also a rookie, has been benched 3 different times this year by the Jets. He doesn't want to get beat deep. And the Dolphins knew it. Now, this time around, will the Jets play soft and give a cushion at the line, or are they going to go into this game saying, you know what, we're out of the playoffs, let's play a bump and run, let's get up in their face, and we're not going to give them the 3 and 5 step quick pass game, which might, if they cover well, give those pass rushers some time to get there. But pass rushers, the last time these two teams met, just had no time to get there.
Well, a healthy Cromartie, it could make a difference.
Yes.
Anyway, not only are you going to be doing the Dolphin game this week, but you're doing the Canes and Louisville, which is going to be highly interesting to the folks down here. And before we start talking Dolphins, what about that game?
Well, I'm excited to see, I guess, Teddy Bridgewater might be his last game. The fun part about that game, in a way, are all of the intertwining storylines. You know, Morris is the quarterback at UN because Bridgewater was going to go there with all of those Miami Northwestern guys. But then Randy Shannon gets fired, so those guys all decide, let's go someplace else. They all go to Louisville. In comes Al Golden. So, you know, it's really interesting to think about where the two programs have gone and where they could be. I mean, this could be a UM team that right now is being quarterbacked by Teddy Bridgewater instead of Morris.
It'll be an interesting game. It was quite a year for the U. My Blue Devils beat them. Otherwise, Miami could be playing in a different bowl game. Although this is a terrific matchup, and it should be an exciting ball game. And I think
there's a lot of NFL players in this game, or at least future NFL players in this game between these two teams.
You'll see a lot of offense. I'm convinced of that.
There's no doubt.
Bob, going to look forward to watching your telecast on ESPN at what time is it? 6 o'clock on Saturday.
I think we're kicking it off at 6:45 in Orlando.
Okay. All right. And, of course, always great to talk with you. Very happy, healthy New Year to you and the family. How many you got now?
We are at 5, and not just holding, but 5 and completely, you know, the dam is rebuilt. There's no chance for more than 5.
Okay. Hey, I'm really happy for your success. And, like I said, great to have a chance to talk with you. And look forward to watching you on Saturday and seeing you on Sunday.
You're the best. Anytime.
All the best to you, Bob.
See you, Hank.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this week's Hammer Time podcast. If the Dolphins make the playoffs, we'll be back next week with another great interview. Thanks to Bob Wischusen, the radio voice of the Jets. And let's hope for good things to happen on Sunday. And maybe we'll have a playoff to look forward to.